want to build a community and share other women's stories.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Tea with TE podcast. Today, I'm very excited to have Shelley Archambault on the line and on with us today. Shelley is the former CEO of MetricStream. She's a Fortune 500 board director, strategic advisor, and the author of Unapologetically Ambitious, which is one of my favorite business books. Wow. And Shelley, thank you so much for coming on and joining us.
Oh, absolutely. I've been looking forward to this, Terry.
It's a pleasure to have you here. I think we'll get straight to it, and if you don't mind, so just starting by sharing a little bit about your background, but also what inspired you to write Unapologetically Ambitious?
So I'll make sure a little bit of background first. I think that'll lead into why I decided to write it. So I grew up in a household of very modest means, and I worked hard because of my family. You go to college. My father didn't have a college degree, so it was all about getting good education. And I got to high school, and my guidance counselor, you know, that junior year obligatory conversation, are you going to college, et cetera? I said, yes, I'm going to college, because that's what it was in my family. And she said, well, what do you want to do after college? And I was like, well, I don't know. I just know I want to make enough money so that I can keep my thermostat at 72 degrees, eat out in restaurants, and travel, because those were all things I couldn't do. So I said, that's what I want. And she laughed and then realized that I was really quite serious. And then she said, well, what do you like to do? And for this, I give her a ton of credit, because I said, oh, that's easy. I like clubs. French Club, American Field Service, National Honor Society. I'm even a Girl Scout, but like, don't tell anybody, right? And she said, well, you know, clubs is like business. You pull people together and you get things done. And I said, great. I'll go into business. And I like leading these clubs, so I'll go lead a company. And when I looked up, those people were called CEOs. So I decided literally like 16 that I was going to be a CEO.
Amazing.
But I didn't know what it meant. I mean, really, right? I'm just thinking it's like running clubs. So anyway, that set me on a trajectory. I did. It set me on a trajectory. I built my career in tech and went on to ultimately indeed become CEO of a technology company. So what happened along the way is there weren't many women, and definitely not many women of color, mm-hmm. that were taking on senior leadership roles in tech companies back then. And so people kept reaching out to me to pick my brain, hear my story. And I said, you know what? I love to meet these people, and I would do it. But later in my career, when I got more responsibility, I just didn't have time to meet with everybody one-on-one. So I said, you know, when I get to phase two, when I pass my CEO baton, I'm going to write it down. I'm going to write down the lessons I learned. I'm going to write down what made Shelley Shelley. And I'm going to share that life is hard, which it is, but nobody tells you that. And I wanted people to know that just because it gets hard for you doesn't mean that you can't do it. It just means you need more help, because that's what I did throughout my career. Every time I got hard, I just got more help. So I wanted more people to know that so they could achieve their aspirations. And that's why I wrote the book.
Thank you so much for writing it, Shelley. It's truly an inspiration to read. And I think the journey that you have been on, anybody will listen or read and will think, oh my gosh, it's inspirational. And I think it also resonates with everybody, not just people of certain status, which I think sometimes is the case. I really enjoyed it. And I think I'd love to understand from you the term unapologetically ambitious, because again, I think great wording. But what does that mean to you personally, but also for women in leadership?
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, it's interesting. I knew when I wrote the book that I wanted the word ambition somewhere in the title, because way too often people would say something like, oh, you're ambitious, but it wasn't meant as a compliment. And I thought, you know, that's ridiculous. Because what is ambition? Ambition just means you have something in the future that you're aspiring and working toward. Shouldn't everybody have something they're working toward? So why is that a bad word, right? And ambition doesn't mean that you're going to step over everybody, take no prisoners, right? Hold your, no, that's just being rude. right?
Yeah.
So this notion of being told that, and I was ambitious and that wasn't good, I thought, that's ridiculous. And then I had no title for the book because I couldn't just call it ambitious. Right? It's ridiculous.
I needed something else.
Exactly. So I had the whole book written, Dairy. I didn't have a title. And I was talking to friends, all women, and we got into the topic about women apologizing so much. And I said, hey, no, it feels like women are raised from the cradle to apologize.
Yeah.
We apologize for everything. I mean, not just when we did something wrong, which, oh, by the way, is probably only about 5 or 10% of the time we say, I'm sorry. The rest of the time we say, I'm sorry, we say it to make everybody else feel better. Right? I mean, we say it to show empathy, to show we care. We say it to break tension, right? We say it to keep the peace. I mean, we use, I'm sorry, like cooks you salt. It just makes everything taste better. But what happens is when we're saying, I'm sorry all the time, then people actually think, especially men, that we are sorry and that somehow we are responsible. So we have to stop doing that. And that's when it clicked. I said, you know what? That's it. Unapologetically ambitious. Everyone has the right to be ambitious, and no one should have to apologize for it.
I totally agree. And I think in terms of thinking about that, leads me nicely into my next segue for the question, which would be, how can we cultivate our ambition and take that with us, but without being apologetic for it? How can we kind of take authenticity through our careers without having to say sorry?
Mm-hmm. I really think it comes down to just being intentional, right? Just being intentional. Deciding that you want to go after something is fine. But now think about how to get there. How do you improve your odds? Because to me, that's what life is all about. Life is all about, how do you decide what it is that you want professionally, personally? And when I say want, that could be, do you want to achieve, you want to create, you want to impact, you want to help, right? Whatever it is, deciding what those things are and then intentionally working toward them. Yeah. And when you do that, then every step of the way, it's all about, okay, how do I improve my odds to make this happen? What are the skills I need? What are the experiences? Who are the people I ought to know? Right? What it's all those things. Who are the team members that I put around me? But by being intentional and working towards something, right, then we can all be unapologetically ambitious. And as I said, the attitude is really what's important here. Because it's not about, I'm going to be ambitious, I'm doing this, get in line, right? Support me. No, it's not what it is. It's really about, hey, this is what I'm trying to do. Right? We'd love your help.
Yeah.
This is what I'm aspiring towards. This is what I really want to achieve or to build. And then get people's help. And by the way, you can take help a number of different ways. You know, sometimes it's just letting people know what you want to do. You can have the conversation and say, hey, you know, Terry, say you're my boss, Terry.
Yeah.
I could say something, and maybe I'm a manager of, who knows, manager of finance. And I could say, you know, Terry, one day I aspire to be a senior executive in finance. Do you think I have the potential? Now, what have I just done? I just told you what I want to do, but I did it in a way that you can receive, right? Yeah. I did it in a way in which I asked you, what's your opinion? And now you'll share your opinion, which will probably be, yes, you have potential. Because frankly, you wouldn't be working there if they didn't think you had potential, right? So it's a really, you know, kind of a layup kind of question. So they'll say, sure, because that's no commitment. There's no commitment to time. There's no commitment to anything. Wonderful. That's when you have the opening. Then you say, what advice do you have for me? Right? On skills, experience, right? All these things. But that's how you can take help. You can let people know what you want to do. It's all about using the right attitude so that you can improve your odds that people want to support you, that they want to help you.
Yeah, it's so true. And Shelley, that is a theme that I see throughout your career and your life when you share that in the book. I think everything you did was intentional. And I think there is thought behind every move that you made. And I know that you talk about that a lot throughout your journey in terms of, is it the right thing to do at this time? And how can I get sponsorship behind me to know that this is the right thing? Your journey to becoming one of HITECH's first African-American CEOs must have been difficult. And I know you do talk about this in the book, and you talk a lot around the paths, not just through IBM, but obviously everything else that kind of got you to this point as the female CEO. And could you share some of those key moments with us that took you on that journey?
Oh, goodness. There were so many, so many lessons and challenges and things along the way. You know, you have to understand, I started my career in the early 80s. Mm-hmm. So in the early 80s, there weren't a whole lot of women leading businesses. Oh, matter of fact, it was hard to find any, right? And here I was starting my career, and I was, started out in sales, which, yeah. Oh, by the way, I tell everybody, I think everyone should do a stint in sales.
I loved that
career. It's so true, because there is so much you learn in sales that you will leverage throughout the rest of your life. At least that's true for me. It's probably the job whose skills I gained and used the most. Because in sales, you learn how to ask for what you want. Mm-hmm. You learn how to take a no. But more importantly, you learn that a no isn't a no. No doesn't mean no. No just means something's not right. You just mean something's not right. Timing's not right. The value proposition isn't right. Skills aren't right. The people aren't right. I mean, something isn't right. So then it's just a matter of figuring out, great, how do I make it right? So that you can get the yes. Yeah. And learning that early helps you deal with, quote, rejection, right? And deal with hurdles and deal with everything else. Because you realize, that's not a no. It just means I've got to figure out a different way of getting there. And you learn how to create win-win situations. You learn how to read a room. You know how to power stakes. You learn how to negotiate. There's just all these things. So yes, I think everyone should do a stint in sales. So sales was a key part of my career success. But the other was, I really tried hard to listen, Terry, along the way. You know, I like to tell people, great advice comes from the sky. It just falls from the sky. But many of us just aren't listening for it. So it just hits the ground. But if you listen hard, you'll just hear a lot of good pieces of advice along the way. You know, for instance, There were a number of things that I don't even know where I learned them, but it was just listening, right? In terms of to others, to be able to say, oh, okay. Like along the way, I heard, if you pick an industry that's growing, industries that are growing, you have companies that are growing, and companies that are growing never have enough resources. So that if you're good at what you do, you can move farther faster. It's like, oh, okay. So that's what I did by picking tech, right? I remember early in my career, a woman got an award. I mean, back then, this is the 80s, she got like a $10,000 award, which for me was huge. Yeah. And I, you know, and I went up and congratulated her after the meeting, and she looked at me and she said, Shelley, there are a lot of people in this office that are working just as hard as I am. She says, the key is people need to know what you do. They don't know what you do, they won't respect what you've done. Okay, right? Think about that. A lot of us, we think we just work hard, put our heads down, right?
Yeah.
People will say, good job. And they might say, good job. But they probably don't know what you do every day because they're not focused on you per se, right? So you just need to make sure that people kind of know what you do. So, I mean, just things like that all along the way, I learned that I could have as many mentors as I wanted. Because the first person that I asked to be my mentor told me he already was, and go find somebody else. And I thought, really? I had no idea he was. He thought he was a mentor. So I learned that, gosh, mentors can be informal. They don't have to be formal. Yeah. And he told me to get another one. I gave as many as I wanted. So I adopted mentors all over the place, right? I mean, it's all those things. Advice falls from the sky. Yeah. We just have to have our ears open, listen, and figure out how we can use it to help ourselves in being intentional and moving forward with trying to do what we want to do.
Yeah. Back to the intentional thought process, which I love. I think it's a common theme that people should lead with, I think, when they're thinking about career progress. Imposter syndrome and the thoughts around that and how that comes up, I think particularly from females, don't necessarily hear it talked about upon the male demographic. I think from our side, we probably lead with it from a female perspective. But do you have any advice for people that are feeling kind of self-doubt in their career or maybe at a crossroads?
Mm. So first of all, imposter syndrome. Let's just define what we're talking about here. The whole imposter syndrome thing is that little voice, right?
Yes.
It's that little voice that when you face something new, when you're looking at a new opportunity, a promotion, speaking in front of a group or joining a new club or whatever it might be, something new, it's that little voice that starts creeping up that says, wait till they figure out you're not as smart as they think that you are, right? Just wait till they know that you don't have all the skills, right, that you're supposed to have for this job, right? It's this voice that's telling you, why do you think you're going to be successful? You're probably going to fail. You don't know it. It's this voice, right? It's this yes. voice that it's like reverberating. And when you hear this voice, you can't remember anything good that you've done or accomplished. I mean, it's just the voice that is trying to tear you down and that's the voice.
Yeah.
Right. That's this imposter syndrome that says you're a fraud, right? You're not going to make it. You're not real. You're not capable. You're not credible. Well, let me tell you, I've suffered from that voice my entire life.
Really?
I still do from time to time, which is ridiculous. The answer is yes, absolutely. But here's the key. You know, Terry, you said you think it feels like, you know, women more so than anybody else. Well, that's true, except studies show that just about everyone suffers from imposter syndrome at some point or another, men and women.
Yeah.
Now, women more so than men, right? And frankly, women of color the most, but everybody at times hears this voice.
Mm-hmm.
So what does that tell you? If everybody's hearing it, then it's actually not you.
Yes.
Right? I mean, if everybody's hearing it, it's like in the air, it's like television. You know, you turn it on, it comes across the airways. Everybody sees the same thing at the same time. Mm-hmm. Well, what do you do when what you're watching is scary or very uncomfortable, right? Or whatever, you turn it off. That voice, tell yourself, this voice isn't real. Everybody hears the voice, turn this thing off.
Yeah.
And if that doesn't work, remember, the only time you feel it or hear this voice is when you're facing something new. Well, guess what? You wouldn't have the opportunity. You wouldn't have the new job offer. You wouldn't be invited to the group. You wouldn't be asked to speak. You wouldn't be whatever, if others didn't think that you were capable.
Yeah.
So if you can't believe in yourself, believe them when they offer the opportunity. They're telling you, we believe in you, right? Now, if that doesn't work, then fake it. Fake the confidence. Because here's the key. If you think about it, you always figure it out.
Yeah.
No matter what you're facing, you always figure it out. So give yourself the benefit of the doubt and say, all right, maybe I don't know everything, right? Maybe I'm not perfect yet. Maybe I don't know, but I'm going to figure this out. So shoulders back, chin up, walk in with confidence that you're going to figure it out because you always have.
Yeah.
Right.
And so what's the worst that can happen, right? Normally.
Exactly. Exactly. That's the question I always ask myself when I face a risk, Terry, is what's the worst that can happen? And when you really ask yourself that, there is extremely little out there that will kill you.
Yes,
so if it's not going to kill you, then okay, right? You can survive it. So push forward.
Yeah, exactly. I think it's great that you are open, and we'll talk about that though. I think a lot of people will sometimes say, oh, I don't get that. I don't struggle with that.
Oh man. No, I mean, listen, when I first got wasn't even my first board seat. I've been serving on public boards for 8 years. I was a CEO for over a decade, right? The whole bit.
Yeah.
I get invited to sit on the board of Verizon.
Yeah.
The biggest company, right? I think, oh my gosh, huge. This is amazing.
Yeah.
Right? So I go to my first board meeting and I get ready to walk into the room and you open the door and you walk in and it's like, there's the CEO of Walgreens. That's the former chair of the SEC. That's the former secretary of transportation for the, I'm like, oh my God, right? Am I going to be a hold my own in this group? Who am I? My jelly, get over it. right? It's that voice that creeps up to say, you don't belong, right? You shouldn't be here. That, nope, still at it, right? But what did I do? Wake myself up, shoulders back, chin up, walk in, right? Act like I know what I'm doing until I do.
Yeah.
So, yes, always.
How was that? How was that first day as the board advisor of Verizon?
It was great. Honestly, I mean, it was nerve wracking in the beginning because you're sitting there saying, okay, don't want to do anything wrong.
Yeah.
Right? And you're learning a new language. You know, every company has their own language, the acronyms, right? The whole bit. So I'm keeping this list so I can ask people on the side and not interrupt the flow, et cetera. But no, it was great. People were wonderful. Was able to contribute. So it was all good.
Great. And I know your career and life journey hasn't just been about work. You are a mother.
Yes.
And I'd love to just kind of, and you do talk about this in the book, and it's one of my favorite parts in terms of obviously how you juggle work and personal life. But also, I think it's great to hear from you directly. How can you manage that? And what's the best advice that you have in terms of managing that, particularly as you grow through your career?
Yeah, so that is one of the challenges that all of us parents face, right? Yeah. But because of societal expectations and judgment, women feel even more, right, responsibility. And as a result, what I figured out was this whole notion of work-life balance. You know, the word balance, I actually can't stand that word balance. And the reason I don't like work-life balance is because what is a balance? A balance is a fixed structure, right? It's a base with a bar across the top, two weights on both sides that never move. If it's in balance, they never move. They're static. Well, Terry, is your life static?
No.
Is my life static? No, life does this. And all of a sudden we're supposed to be like holding this thing in balance while our life is doing all this. And if we don't, then somehow we're judged poorly. That's ridiculous. All right. I'm a big believer in work-life integration.
Yeah.
What I mean by work-life integration is, yes, we wear a lot of hats. You know, it could be wife, could be mother, could be sister, could be daughter, could be volunteer, could be churchgoer, could be, I mean, all these hats. But you know what? They're all in one head. They're on one head, which means you have to take all of your priorities, professional, personal, community, whatever it might be, put them together. And then reprioritize ruthlessly. And that's the key. Ruthless prioritization. So that you get done what you need to get done across your life. Right?
Yeah.
What that
yeah.
might mean, though, is there some things that don't make the priority list. That, yes, quote, should get done, but you can't do them. So what that means is you either have to learn how to live without them getting done, or you find somebody else to do them. But the key is you want to make the decision. You decide. Think about it. You've got a plate. You've got all these things coming on the plate. You want to decide what you take off the plate and set down. Mm-hmm. Because when you do, they don't break. When you put everything on the plate and you keep letting things get added to the plate and you don't make a conscious, intentional decision what comes off the plate, stuff falls off the plate.
Yes.
And when it falls, it breaks. Right? That's a problem. Because then you got to clean up the mess. And that just takes more time and more things fall off the plate. And the next thing you know, you're feeling overwhelmed. And, right? No, no, no. Ruthless prioritization. You take stuff off the plate. Now, one of the keys to be able to do that, because you sit there and say, oh, Shelley, that sounds fine. But yeah, who can really do that? But one of the keys to being able to do that, I found, is that you have to decide for yourself what you are willing to be judged on. Because one of the reasons that so many things fall on the plate is because we feel judged, especially as women.
Yeah.
We feel judged on everything. We get judged not only on who we are, you know, maybe what job we have, what education, where we live, a car we drive, all right, how we look. And we feel judged. But we also feel judged about our families. How does our husband look? What does our husband do? Or what does our partner do? Or what do our kids look like? How are they dressed? Where do they go to school? What's the vacations? What are they? I mean, oh my God. Right? So when you feel judged on all of that, you feel you have to do all of that. You've got to manage. It's like, oh my God, my son's shirt is wrinkled. So you got to stop and you got to iron the shirt. Why? Because I'd be judged. They walk outside and thinking, what kind of mother do they have? Right? I mean, it's all that stuff. So no wonder So the key is we have to decide what we're willing to be judged on and just let go of the rest. You know, in the book, I talk about a story that just brings this home, which was my daughter. So my daughter was born. I'm working. My husband's working. My daughter's born. She's born with this thick, curly hair. You see, I have curly, thick, curly hair. And the best way for this thick, curly hair to look nice every day is you got to brush, comb, you know, part, braid, put little ribbons, right? The whole bit. Mm-hmm. Now, do I know how to do that? Yes. I had long hair when I was young, right? Yes. Does my late husband, all 6'2", former football player, big hands, does he know how to part, braid, plait? No. Did he have to learn? Yep. Right? Yes. Because I can't do that all the time. No. So what did that mean? That meant when she was going off to preschool at like, you know, 3-4 years old, and he did her hair, she looked pretty jacked up. I mean, thick braid, thin braid, unravel. I mean, you know, now, did I redo her hair? Nope. Why? Because he had to learn, and it's practice. And she's 3-4. She didn't care what she looks like. So she goes to school. Now, do I know that people would look at her and think, where is her mother? How could they let her go into school looking like that? Right? Of course. Do they ever say, where is her father? But no, we're the mothers. We get judged. Yeah. But here's the key. I didn't care.
Right.
They don't know us. They don't know our priorities. They don't know what's important to us. Right? So therefore, I'm not going to let that judgment bother me. And you know what? In like a month or so, my husband was doing a great job with her hair.
Exactly.
And he was fine. So that's the key. Let go of the judgment so that you don't feel compelled to redo, to do it anyway. Oh, let me fix it. Or let me do, right? You got to let go of that judgment. And when you do, then you can have fewer things on your plate. You are more apt to be able to take help. And by the way, taking help is also key. And I know I'm talking a lot about this, but it's so important. I mean, everyone, a 5-year-old knows their colors. They can separate the laundry. All right. Everybody has a job at home. Everybody can have a job at home.
Yeah.
You don't have to do all this stuff.
I completely agree. And that you do talk a lot about that in the book in terms of not just doing everything and feeling like you have to do everything on your own either. And it's just something that reminded me of that just now was actually when you even talk about having to go and do your walking meetings, because I took that away from your book actually, because I thought, why don't I do combine both and do it at the same time? I don't have to lose one or the other over a lunch break. I can do both, which again is something that I took with me. And you talk a lot about network and community in the book as well. And I think community obviously played a huge part throughout your life, I think, and is really important to you. But I think women do struggle with networking, which might sound surprising, but I hear it a lot. And I think it's kind of not knowing how to build that network or where to go. What's your kind of key thoughts around that?
Yes. A network is not how many business cards you have or how many contacts you have in your phone, right?
Yeah.
A network are the relationships that you have, right? The people that you can call on for help or support and will do things for you when maybe it's not all that convenient, right? So that's a network. And building a network is just about building relationships. And you know, studies actually show women are better at building relationships. So if you have to, just change the terminology.
Yes.
Don't think about building a network. Just think about building relationships. And I find the best way to build relationships is to start by just helping people.
Yeah.
If you help someone, offer to help someone, they get a chance to get to know you, right? And when they get to know you and see you in a helpful way, they're more apt to think that, number one, you're a generous person, right? Weren't you nice to kind of offer that? And they may reciprocate, right, in some way, in terms of in the future. So all those things can help you build a network. I've moved around a ton. If you read my book, I've moved around a ton in my career. I think I've lived now in 18 or 19 different places. Wow. So every time you move, right? You're getting started again. So one of the things that my husband and I would do as we moved around is literally within about 2 months of moving, we'd have a party.
Yeah.
You simply say, what? Your house couldn't possibly have been ready. Remember that judgment thing? No, the house wasn't perfect, but it was also a great event. In terms of having to hang the pictures, get at least the outside looked pretty good. So we'd have a party. Now, why do we have a party? And because that way we invite people over. If you invite people over, not everybody, but a number of them will actually reciprocate when they do something. And so suddenly you've invited people over, they'll invite you to something. Who did we invite? Everybody we met that we thought was interesting. I mean, I remember when we moved to Dallas, we invited the UPS guy, right? And I say, who do we invite? I invited people that I met in the gym. I invited neighbors. I mean, when I say, who do we invite? Literally, invited anybody.
Everybody.
Because it's just a matter of getting started. And then you learn the people that you like, the people that you don't, but you get started. And again, people invite you, and then you get to meet people they know, and you do things. It's that kind of thing. And then at work, you know, you see somebody might be working really hard, heads down. You might just say, hey, anything I can do to help you? It looks like you've got a hard deadline, right? It's just things like that. And get engaged, right? Join an organization or a group that fits something that you're interested or passionate about. All those ways are ways to build a network, to get engaged, and to build relationships.
Yeah, I think that's your sales background coming through too.
Yes.
Every time you moved, it was a bit of a risk. And I know not all of the times that you leapt, even when you were making the move from IBM, it wasn't that you hadn't thought about the risk taking, but you talk about this in the book that you know that you have to take these calculated risks and I guess be intentional through your career. But what can we think about when we are going to take risks and whether it's the right thing for us in our career?
You know, when you're thinking about a risk, first start with what's the likely outcome if I do this? What's the likely outcome? And then what's the best outcome? And then it's the question I said before, okay, what's the worst that can happen? Yeah. So now what you've got is you've created for yourself kind of this spread, which is what's the likely outcome of doing this? What's the best, right? And what's the worst? And then you look to see, is that balanced, right? Is there a good reason to move forward with this? And what I found is when I do that, really objectively, right? And by the way, what's the worst that can happen? I fail. Okay, that's not the answer. When I say what's the worst that can happen, I mean, you have to ask yourself, what's the worst that can happen? Okay, so maybe I fail at this. So are they going to fire me?
Yeah.
Unlikely.
Probably not. Yeah, exactly.
Exactly. And if it is something that's that big and they could fire me, okay, if they fired me, then what's the worst that can happen? Could I get another job? Probably. Is the opportunity significant enough that that's worth that balance? The answer is it might be, right? So, I mean, so don't stop with, oh my God, I could fail.
Yeah.
We learn more from failures. We learn more from mistakes. We learn more from hard, challenging times than good ones. Yeah. And all the skills that you have, if you go through the hard time, the challenge, the whole bit, you will learn more skills. They will be stronger, they will be strengths, and it will actually propel you forward. So failure by itself, that's not an answer for what's the worst that can happen. I want you to go deeper, right, than that when you're asking yourself that question. So that's what I ask myself. And then I move forward because I find that as I do the what's the worst that can happen, rarely is the answer that I'm going to die or that I'm going to impact my kids to the point where they won't have a good life or that I'm going to be homeless. Or that I'm going to, I mean, those things usually don't come up. Mm-hmm. So if they don't come up, you take the risk.
Yeah. And it's usually worth the reward.
Absolutely. Risk and reward, risk and opportunity, two sides of the same coin. If you aren't taking risks, you just aren't going to get those kinds of opportunities.
Thank you, Shelley, for sharing that. I think it's helpful for people to actually dig deeper and think more broadly around what the true risk is. Thinking about our audience, and they are mainly ambitious leaders on their journey in their career, typically are females. What final message would you have to aspiring, ambitious folks that are trying to achieve their goals unapologetically?
Remember, you own your career, not your boss, not your mentor, not HR, right? Not your spouse. You own your career. So therefore, be intentional with it. It's your career. People spend more time planning a vacation than they do planning and thinking about their career, right? I mean, you would never like spend $5,000 for airline tickets, tell your neighbors I'm going on a 2-week trip, put the dog in the kennel, right? Head to the airport, get on the plane, strap in that seatbelt, and then say to the pilot, so where are we going anyway? Right? You would never do that. We do it with our careers all the time. We spend all this time and money, education, training, we read books, we get groups, we get support, we do all this stuff, right? And then we put our heads down, do some work, and we wait for somebody to tell us what we might do next.
Yeah.
No, you own your career. Be intentional. Spend at least as much time as you spend planning vacations to plan your career and think about what skills do I need? What opportunities, what experiences, what might I like to try? Plan your career so that you can achieve the things you want at the end of the day. Because you don't want to wake up 5 years from now, 10 years from now and think, gosh, I'm just not where I thought I would be.
Yeah. And it flies by, right? Those years.
It does. It does.
I do have one final question, because this is the Tea with TE, She Who Leads podcast. How do you take your tea?
Plain. I take my tea straight. I like herbal tea or green tea. Nothing in it.
Great. Shelley, you are an inspiration to everybody. I have truly enjoyed reading and listening to Unapologetically Ambitious. And I urge anybody that's listening to this podcast to go and buy a copy and listen, because it's genuinely such a great journey that you've been on. You're inspirational. And thank you so much for sharing with that today.
You are very, very welcome. Thanks everyone for listening. And also feel free to follow me on social media. I try to put a lot of inspiration, tips, advice, things like that out there. And also stay tuned. I've got a cool thing I'm planning to do later on this year. So if you follow me, you'll hear about it.
I'm so excited. I can't wait to hear myself.
Oh, good.
Shelley, honestly, thank you so much. It's been a pleasure. Really appreciate you coming on.
Absolutely, Terry. Bye.
Bye.